is up, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Fudge Muppet. This is the Elder Scrolls podcast. I'm Scott, here with Michael and Drew, and today we are talking all about the Dromora, the Lesser Daedra, but also we're going to be talking about the Zivalai and the Zivkin, which is sort of like a hybrid race, but we'll get into that. But first, we're going to start with the Dromora. Which one of you guys would like to take it away?
Well, Daedrologist Drew in the house.
All right, I'll take the reins. I'll keep it nice and simple, but
take
basically,
the horns.
Dromora are, you know, we all know what they look like, the kind of devilish-looking Daedra, the typical Daedra that you associate with the Daedra. That's the Dromora. And the Dromora are kind of unique in terms of Daedric races because, for the most part, and this applies to the Zivalai and the Zivkin as well, is they're a lot more intelligent than most Daedric races. So, while, you know, a lot of Daedric creatures, they're just, you know, they're naturally chaotic and they don't really have organization or anything like this, the Dromora tend to organize themselves, and it's something kind of fundamental, whereas, you know, for a mortal, you're born into a family, you're often, but you know, you have a racial identity, you have your family, you have your, you know, the lord or king or whatever, who's, it's kind of, you know, there's a natural hierarchy in place, whereas for Daedra, you know, your vassal goes to the void, and you kind of spring back into one of the realms of one of the princes, usually based on their whims, and you don't really have anything. You don't have parents. So basically, Dromora have kind of instilled this themselves. They've developed their own clan and caste systems as a way to kind of have some camaraderie and companionship, as well as rules and you know, reasons to live a structured life, which is kind of bizarre for Daedra.
I like to think about them in the same, as we discussed in the Mazkin Auriel podcast, how like the Mazkin, as said by Haskell, like, oh, this proud race, and they're sort of like this kind of, it's easier, I think, to think about Oblivion and the Lesser Daedra less in terms of, oh, who do they belong to or which Daedra created them. Rather, they are just all of these races, whether that be Scamps, Clanfears, you know, Zivalai or Dromora or Mazkin, that are spread throughout the different planes of Oblivion and find their own allegiances, mm-hmm. in the same way that you would have, say, Nords or something, or the races of man that have spread out and found their different allegiances and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is a really cool race, considering that as far as Daedra go, like Drew was saying, not many of them are particularly sentient in the way that mortals are, you know, in the way that they act. There are some examples, but generally speaking, like the Dromora view them as kind of below them and mindless beasts, you know, this other Daedra. They're the high-class Daedra. We call them Lesser Daedra, but they're kind of just second to Daedric princes in terms of, like, their power level and their kind of brain power, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
You know how a Clanfear kind of acts like just a beast.
You could say that most Daedra are sentient, but they're not sapient. They're not, like, experiencing mortal emotions the way the Dromora do. And the fact that, you know, you hear from Dromora themselves saying, you know, we have the capacity to feel fear and shame. So it makes sense that they kind of give themselves a purpose in life and a way to display their strength by coming up with these hierarchical systems.
Yeah, and they certainly must enjoy a lot of the kind of horrible displays and actions that they do, as much as they also kind of, it's been said that they don't really have like a good and evil, it just simply is, and they're very oaths oriented and duty oriented, and they have kind of like a, you know, this is what I said I'm gonna do, so I'm gonna do it kind of attitude. And they also get respect for adhering to their, because they live forever too, adhering to their oaths and their promises gives them a great respect, because it's seen as this, you know, extremely difficult task, because it's not like, oh, I have to agree to this for a mortal lifespan or for a year or some deal or something. It's forever, depending on the oath.
Yeah, it's interesting that they are kind of like, just like, there's a sense of chivalry almost, and sort of, like, the honest sense, I get this kind of idea of this band of traveling knights, and then they find a lord to serve, and then they're like, okay, we're going to sort, maybe even samurai is a better description, but then they're going to serve that lord or whatever, whether that be a Daedric prince or a powerful mage or something that has summoned them. And you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, I do like that sort of aspect, because in ways you can kind of think about, like, oh, I'm if you're trying to control an Atronach or a Clanfear, it's like they might, like, you know, try and, they might go nuts and try and attack you and kill you or reject your control. Whereas it kind of seems a little bit more like transactional, like, here, you've hired the mercenaries and we will honor our contract or debt.
It does depend, though, because Dromora are known to, you know, considering that they have their rank systems and that they're kind of hold themselves in high esteem, right? Mm. Summoning them can be the ultimate act of offense. They have to do what you say, but they would absolutely hate it. You know, if there's some esteemed high-ranking Dromora, and then you're like, you know what? You're now a Dromora butler. Congratulations. Like,
so, yeah, see, that's
absolutely
the
torment them. And there is a story. Sorry, I'll just say, Darkest Darkness, I believe, is the story.
Hmm.
Oh, no, it's A Tragedy in Black. I knew it had something to do with dark. A Tragedy in Black. And it kind of is just a narrative, but it's basically the story of a Dromora who's summoned and asked how to make a magic dress needed for a birthday. And the Dromora ends up saying, oh, you need a soul gem, and then says, oh, I've got a soul gem, here you go. And that actually, according to this little tale, allows the Dromora to break free and betray the person and kill them and put their soul into this black soul gem, because you're never meant to take a free gift from a summoned Dromora. It says it breaks the conjuration, freeing the summoned from the summoner. And again, this, we don't know how true this is because it reads like a story more, but it is quite interesting still.
Once again, there's going to be that like personal, like individuality, like differences, but like, I like that there's an example in Morrowind of where there's the Dromora. I can't remember if it's a big piece of meteor or rock, but basically a tribunal sort of site. They kind of like employed by the tribunal temple to protect some sites and so on. There's even one which you can kind of harass over and over and over, and then basically he threatens to kill you, and he actually does attack you, and he says he's going to essentially defile your corpse and so on in a very rough manner. But yeah, it's interesting.
So I think one of the reasons why they're, you know, despite being the kind of race that is very keen to honor their place, the reason they're still so dangerous to summon is because I think they're much more likely to kind of answer to fellow Daedra rather than to mortals. Because if you think about it, you know, the benefit of being a mortal, even though you have a finite lifespan, is that you're born into that, you're having a family, you've got an afterlife to look forward to, all of this stuff. Whereas for a Dromora, you can die and die and be reborn and keep coming back, learn from your mistakes. And you, as a result, you just get stronger and stronger and you earn a better place. And then you've got some random snot-nosed magician who summons you. And, you know, so I feel like if a mortal is going to summon a Dromora, they have to really be powerful enough to impress this Dromora and feel like they're in either peers or on a higher level.
I was just going to say, that's the simple reason why in gameplay mechanics that Dromora Lords are like an expert or like higher level spell, and you have more simple kind of ones as lower level spells, because it's your ability to actually exercise your will over them.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the other thing is when you do summon a Dromora, you could almost view it as they are bound by the oath of being summoned so long as your spell and your knowledge of conjuration is good enough to keep them bound to it. But you could almost look at them as like a shifty lawyer. Like, if they can find a loophole to whatever covenant they're bound by so that they can betray you and you don't have the knowledge of how they can do that, they probably will. Because technically, if they're not, you know, technically breaking their agreement, then they're not doing any wrong. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with their actions. It's the agreement, if they can somehow break free of it.
And that's the thing, is they're staunchly loyal to their clans. So, you know, if they may be the most honorable, I'll say person for lack of a better term, they may be the most honorable person amongst their clan, but if you force them to serve some random person who's got, you know, who has nothing to do with their allegiances, that loyalty isn't there. You know, if anything, you're betraying them by forcing this on them. So they're going to want to, you know, backstab you at any turn, despite being loyal creatures.
It does get a bit confusing. You could imagine, you know, how many oaths and agreements you can accept over the course of a immortal lifespan. I can imagine there'd be a lot of crossover and confusion because, you know, you're sworn to this Daedric prince to help him and never go against his goals, but then also to this wizard and to not go against his goals. But then if the wizard's goals and the Daedric prince's goals go against each other, who are you helping? You know, it can all get a little bit messy.
Yeah, there is a, I'm just trying to find the exact quote, but it was basically, It was something. It's something along the lines of basically that oblivion is ever changing, but the oaths held by Dremora are eternal. And so that's kind of a, like, you know, what you're just talking about. It's interesting that, you know, how many oaths and stuff they could. But then again, I feel like an oath can be fulfilled as well. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean an eternity full of, like, an ever-growing list of oaths. Like, it could be, like, fulfill an oath. You know what I mean? Like, any other contract.
Yeah, complete this task, and then they do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, while Dremora, which we'll talk about in a different Lesser Daedra soon, that they're not necessarily the most powerful Daedra, but their ability to be loyal and organized is incredibly valuable, especially to princes like Meereen's Dagon, who, you know, they're very closely associated. Because you can imagine when something like the Oblivion Crisis happens, obviously a big part of the invasion is just unleashing chaos. But just sending out hordes of really unorganized Daedra that can't really think properly isn't really going to win a grand scale war. Whereas having these really well organized troops is a great way to make a revolution happen or to win a war.
I mean, you look at what Dagon did in Battlespire, you know, when we were talking about the Mazkin in a different podcast and how they've been seen in the service of many Daedric princes, as have Dremora, but it seems like they defected from Nocturnal's ranks. Whereas I don't know if that would happen with Dremora, or at least it would be a lot more difficult or less likely to happen due to their loyalty, making them quite reliable.
Well, let's have a quick talk about, before we move on, their Dremora, the hierarchy, basically. So there's 8 ranks that we know about, and you start off first with the Varlets, which are basically the dregs, and then the lowest of the low, and they're just, so the bottom of the caste. But then even if you think about above them are the Curls, and they're supposed to be like a disorganized group of rabble. They're just a bigger bulk of the clan's fighting force, but they're not like the trained warriors like you were just talking about. But then you start getting to the caitiffs and the kinval, and they're sort of, you know, as you go up the rank, they start becoming more organized, better warriors, and so on. And then you sort of start getting into what they call a kynreve, which is like an officer or sheriff in translation. And then it would be kinreve, I guess, because they kind of use like kin, yeah. Kinreve, kin, and then kin marcher, which is sort of like lord. So I guess that's kind of what you're getting. The Dremora lords is technically a kin marcher, but obviously, you know, gameplay names and stuff. Then the Markinaz, which is a grand duke, which this is all rough, like Daedric translations. And then on top of that, there's the Valkinaz, which is like described as a warrior duke. And we do hear about, I like the term like duke, because we hear that quite a bit in reference to the Daedra. We do hear some, like there's a Duke of Scamps in the, I'm pretty sure it's in the 36 Lessons of Vivec and stuff like that.
Of Shivering Isles and.
Yeah, exactly.
And things like that. They are cool titles. I will say we do actually see, again, we say Dremora Lord in Skyrim, you said with a kin marchers, but they do have the titles Markinaz and Valkinaz in Skyrim.
Well, you know, a lord, if you look at it as kind of a mimicry of the real world or of the mortal realm, it's like any land owning role. So a duke owns land, so they're a lord as well. Like, you know, that's kind of the weird thing about it, is the title duke or count or any of these lordly terms, it's like, doesn't actually make sense unless you have a barony or a duchy or whatever. But I imagine most of these officers, unless they actually are given sections of land in the prince's realm, they're not technically lords, but it's just a title. I guess it depends.
But you do get to see them in Skyrim, but they are just the different kind of ranks for how strong you're, like when you're summoning and stuff. There's I know there's the Dremora Markinaz and the Valinaz. I'm just trying to think. Hold on. Will it summon a different ranked one, or am I thinking, I may have this confused. I may be thinking of just from the Dead Thrall's perspective. Because I was doing tons of testing on what's the strongest Dead Thrall for that video. Highly recommend you check that out. And I was testing the Dremora to see if they were powerful.
Yeah.
So you may be correct in saying that the Dremora Lord you summon from Oblivion is a kin marcher.
Yeah. Also, just to throw out some interesting facts, obviously, like, you sort of will associate, like, Dromora with, like, the kind of darker-skinned ones that you'll see with the demonic-y sort of tattoo stuff. But in Battlespire and Daggerfall, they did kind of have a closer to sort of human-like skin, and what you would also compare to the Scarfin, which is another group of intelligent Daedra. It's kind of just interesting to... We could always, like, speculate, I guess, on their, like, common ancestry, because... In the same way, we will sort of get to with the Zivalai and the Dromora and the Scarf, and they're basically all like little horned demons, like not necessarily little, but like sentient horned demons. So I wonder if there is any sort of common ancestry. We have no idea if no one really, so I guess there's...
It's worth noting that their horns are like their balls too. If you're like a weak of fortitude, you've got no horns. That's kind of the way the Dromora see it. I don't mean... In other ways, like their balls, just in that way.
Actually, in the legends depiction, we do get some Dromora that are like lighter skinned, like that more orange.
You do see some like that in the Elder Scrolls Online as well.
Yeah, they do seem to vary depending on what realm they dwell in and who they serve. You know, like it's kind of it's commonly seen the difference between Cold Harbor and Moleg Bal's realm and Dagon and the Deadlands is red versus blue. It's kind of like just the tint to either their skin or, you know, tattoos or their horns and things like that.
Yeah. So I was going to... just one little thing I haven't thought about. The actual name, Dromora. Is Mora, like, you know, Hermaeus.
Right.
Isn't Mora translate to wood or something like that? Hold on, what's the Atmoran name that they call it? Because basically,
Altmora means elder wood, and
is like wood in the same way that Molag is fire and Baal is stone.
Yeah.
So Molag Baal really means fire stone in Daedric, but Atmora wood. It's just. I don't know how you could extrapolate and think about that more. But that's why Hermaeus Mora gets called the Woodland Man by a bunch of other groups. But so I don't know how you could spin that, but Dromora, like Mora, so whatever Dre means, Dr. Dre plus wood. And then you get like Dromora.
Yeah, that's something to think about, actually, because there's probably some connection there. Unless it's just completely coincidental.
I mean, it's just a cool sounding name too. But they do have like, you know, I'm sure you could work something out. I don't know. Maybe there is as many Dromora as there are like trees in Tamriel. Hence they're called. I don't know. but still, it's interesting to look at a little bit of the Daedric language.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably speak more about the Dromora, but should we talk a little bit about the Zivalai and what they're like?
Yeah, let's go to the Zivalai first, and then we can talk about the
Zivalai. Highly intelligent Daedra that I found for many years as a child hard to pronounce the name of.
I mean, I don't even know if I'm getting it right, to be honest. I'm just
we called it Zivali when I was really young. Exivali was when I was a kid. I used to say Exivali. Yeah. But I believe I have heard an NPC in the Elder Scrolls Online say Zivalai. So.
And I think Zivalai is...
Phonetically.
Yeah. And it's pretty cool. It's cool sounding once you get used to it.
Yeah.
So
these ones are of great like power. They're like your brutes, you know. They're very muscly.
But they are also highly intelligent, more so than the Dromora even.
Yes. But they are liable to disloyalty and betrayal.
So they despise when they
haven't been treated properly.
Yeah, they despise being subordinated in any way. They're very individualistic for a lot, you know, for the most part, at least from the other races and which is something huge that separates them from the Dromora, because I'd say they're stronger than the Dromora, at least physically, but they're not really as well adjusted to serving in an organized army or something like that.
Yeah, because the way it works with Dromora is you're just subservient to the rank above you, and you can almost just like pick on the one below you. And if someone in a rank above you is picking on you, you just deal with it. That's just your position. You know, it's not questioned.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, you always got to think, again, that they're individualistic and more so than others, the Zivalai. Because in the same way, there's nothing really that distinguishes them from a Daedric prince outside of their power level, and obviously that they've got like a, they, you know, sort of tend towards a like a Zivalai form. But yeah, having them being so individualistic, it does make it a bit more interesting, because often when you think of Daedra, lesser Daedra at least, you always sort of think in terms of subservience to a greater prince or something. You don't really, and to be honest, that's what you see most of the time. You see the Aurel Mazkin, they're all serving Shae Gorath. You see the Dromora and all of these other Daedra in Meereen's Dagon's armies or Murlagh Bal's armies. So you're always thinking about it, it's like, oh, here's my little demon minions. But you know, in reality, like, you could have it's cool. There could be a lot more individuality, but it's also cool to actually see a race that, I mean, yes, they have been seen to serve more like Pal and Dagon and stuff, but
they do have more individuality.
Yeah, they'd be much more prone to desert if they're not getting the respect they deserve or, you know, anything like this. Whereas, you know, when we talk about the Zivkin, it's kind of the perfect answer to this. You know, Murlagh Bal seeing the virtues of the Dromora and the strength of the Zivalai and wanting to combine those elements so that you can have a race that are as, you know, powerful and imposing as the Zivalai, with the ability to kind of take orders and be very loyal and die for you of the Dromora.
Yeah, I remember. That's the thing. Sorry, you go.
I was just saying, I remember the first time ever seeing a Zivalai in Gaer Alata in Oblivion, when in like around the Torch Realms. Like, I just remember thinking it was like the coolest thing, because it's, you know, when you're a kid too, I really just like, oh, demon, that's epic. Or you're fighting all of these demon Dromora and now there's this big muscular one. It was like pretty intimidating for a little 11-year-old me.
Yeah, and I can really imagine them flying through the air. You know how in Oblivion everything had this like floating physics to it? I remember doing a spinning two-handed backwards attack, which is like, looks kind of funny in retrospect, but you basically just like push them really hard after spinning around with the end of your two-handed weapon, like even if it's a warhammer, and they go flying through the air with this big kind of flop motion. But anyway, about Zivalai, I will say there's this little bit here that says they have a complicated relationship with the Dromora, finding them to be extreme in their behavior and even ostentatious. And that they're kind of like pompous, and that they have this unwarranted conceit. Whereas, Zivalai are seen to be more rogue. Just in general, they have way more like goals of their own.
Well, one tiny, I don't know if this bit is just based on the fact about this, like the Zivalai twins, but the idea that there are Zivalai that do actually like work together in pairs and stuff. So it's kind of like, kind of seeming like, instead of like a big clan-based system, they sort of focus like a more a singular relationship or something with another one who has common goals or common interests or so on. So a bunch of best friends instead of this big open hierarchy kind of thing. But that might also just be based as conjecture, based on the fact that in ESO there's some Zivalai twins, but
yeah, well, the Dromora are naturally going to kind of, you know, not particularly like the Zivalai, because, you know, they're big and strong, and they also kind of just shun a lot of these essential values that the Dromora hold dear, you know. So it's like they can slot themselves really high up in the hierarchy if they wanted, but they'll never really think about anyone, you know. So even if they were above most Dromora ranks, they probably wouldn't treat anyone below them with, you know, like properly. Even though they're higher ranking, you still have to, you know, treat your inferiors with respect, you know.
I feel like we need one of those memes, like the Chad Zivalai.
Yeah.
And put the Dromora next to it.
The Virgin Dromora.
With the head down, and it's like, must obey all commands.
I did find the Talos Reiman one for the podcast, so I've got that in there.
But
it's interesting that, and this could just be due to evolving lore, but there was a clans of Zivalai in Battlespire. I have a feeling it really is they've just gone in different directions with the lore, so I don't know how much you want to talk about that, or maybe they've even culturally changed in time and now they've sort of, you know, there's less clans or something, or maybe there's some clans and there's some more individualistic types, but they were led by a Moth. And
I always read that as Moath.
Moath,
Moath, then.
Yeah. Moath sounds funny, but I don't know, it could be.
But regardless, it's just, you know, an interesting... I don't think you should think too much into that, honestly. I think with all future lore, they're going to go with the individualistic angle.
But hear this, it doesn't really break out from the individualistic angle. I mean, you could say the human race is quite individualistic, especially in the modern era. But of course, there are times when we, in our own individuality, elect to become part of a group for some cause. You know, there's and have
yeah,
a sense.
Yeah, but I think people would... I think people would say that as the argument. It's because we're like communal social creatures is why we feel the need to become part of some community.
Sure, but Zivilai also have goals. So if it's in their interest to come together to help a larger cause that they'll all benefit from or all enjoy, you can easily... What I'm saying is it can make sense. It's not like, oh, is it this law or this law? It's like, it's both.
Oh, yeah. I just imagine going forward, I highly doubt they'll mention clans and stuff. It seems like a relic of the Daggerfall stuff. As is the case with a lot of things. Like any all Battlespire sort of Daggerfall era, there's going to be some differences
Daggerfall.
In lore. Yeah. There's going to be some big differences.
And so that's the main thing with the Zivkin, you know, created by Molag Bal, is that they pretty much just are a combination of these two types of Daedra. You know, even in appearance, they look like bigger, stronger Dromora, and they're very heavily like themed around the kind of pale blue of Cold Harbor. And you know, it says that they're extremely loyal to their Dark Lord Molag Bal.
Have you seen the Zivkin concept art? It looks really, really cool.
Oh yeah,
like,
just seen
it's very it's very high fantasy kind of stuff. But it's like, it's pretty cool.
And they're made in the Vile Laboratory in Cold Harbor, the evil place.
It's the same place where the, is it called the Daedric Titan? The dragon turned into a Daedra. So Molag Bal's done a few of these kind of like corrupting experiments.
He likes his laboratories, doesn't he? I mean, like I talked about in the Magic podcast, you make a flesh Atronach in a lab as well, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish he.
I know it's a bit spooky. Spooky.
There's a bit of.
Isn't it?
There's a little. Yeah, there's a little bit of Molag Bal sort of like. I know he's all about domination and stuff. So the principle of the whole like plane meld makes sense, but the way it was written, I don't know. I feel like he's just become a little bit. Sometimes he becomes a bit more of a catch-all evil baddie rather than a sort of more nuanced sort of look at things. Like the, you know what I mean? He kind of just ends up being like, now I'm just turning, making all of these corrupted extra Daedra,
and I've got torture quotas that need to be carried out and things like this.
Yeah. But what, you know, what way would you have him fleshed out? Let's say Molag Bal's going to appear in Elder Scrolls 6. What part of his realm, other than pure domination, would you like to see kind of have some more nuance?
It's not so much the realm. I just mean like rather honing in on the things that he's known for.
Sorry,
the
I meant corruption. Sphere. I meant sphere of domination.
Well, yeah, I mean honing in on the corruption and domination more so than the sort of, I'm just going to like evil armies and make these evil experiments and stuff. For example, like I really, really like his connection, obviously, with the vampires and stuff. A really cool story behind that. But also how in Dunmer mythology, he's credited, he's one of the headquarters of the House of Troubles, and he is always said to be ruining, trying to ruin Dunmeri purity. Of their clans and houses and stuff. So I think, like, you know, imagine you try to ruin the purity of the dragon blood or something, or you're doing like all of these scheming and just a sort of different way. And also I do like the outright domination, but I just feel like sometimes it's like, oh, mwahahaha, I'm going to make some monsters in a laboratory. Here they come.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all right. It's just not the best interpretation of him or execution, I guess.
That is cool. I mean, the thing is they did choose to make him the cornerstone of the entire plot, so you're gonna have to focus on those elements a bit. But you know, if there was a Elder Scrolls 6, I mean, of course there will be a quest for Molag Bal. I hope so. They better have a quest for every Daedric prince.
Well, it's funny, that will be the first game where they start, like, they can reference the plane meld in retrospect in a mainline Elder Scrolls game.
Yeah, but that just makes me, I just don't want it to be have anything to do with that or be anything like that. I really hope, like you're saying, it does focus on something a bit more unique. And I'm really keen to see another one of the Daedric princes take the spotlight that we haven't seen with huge presence before. You know, even if it's not a main thing, having Periite involved, even as a DLC expansion or just something more, would be really cool.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we've got stories of Dromora being in, mostly in service to Maerun's Dagon, Molag Bal. You see some instances with Boethia. But if we end up fleshing out other Daedric princes, most princes are going to see value in a highly intelligent race of Daedra who will serve them, you know, really well. So, you know, and as you said with Periyat, is you know, the taskmaster, he's going to have lots of Daedra to help him.
Lots of Dromora butlers.
Something to think about too, but interesting about, like, I was just thinking, because, you know, Sanguine himself presents himself in Skyrim as a Dromora, but you can also imagine that the Dromora have taken on roles as, like, pirates and, like, and as, you know, you can summon a merchant or a butler, but, you know, expand that to think about, like, maybe some of Sanguine's rooms or stuff like that. They've got this sort of civilization or, like, taverns and stuff, and there's Dromora butlers and stuff around, like, fulfilling other roles, and it would be interesting, I guess, to see their, like, like maybe their clans, like there's a clan of Dromora, like hospitality related Dromora that are all so into service in that way rather than battle and their honor in performing their tasks and stuff like that. It could be a cool thing to see, especially under the service of other, like, you know, you could write a whole history about, like, oh, this clan of them are in service to Sanguine for this or whatever, and they're all, like, you know, serving beer.
Yeah, so rather than great warriors, you have, like, great chefs or whatever, and you've got the Gordon Ramsay of Dromora and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It could be cool, although at least from
Hell's
what we...
Kitchen.
from what we know about them so far, they do seem to have a culture that kind of revolves around preparing for battle and war and training, and each time they die, you know, they've got the experience of the battle that killed them to learn from and continue on and be a better fighter. And, you know, at least it seems they make their own weapons and armor, this Daedric kind of stuff. Although it is interesting, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's just a leveling thing in Oblivion, but you can get a weaker version where it's just called, like, Dromora Mace, but it looks exactly like Daedric and it's just weaker than Daedric.
Yeah, so there's all of the Dromora series of weapons. They look exactly like Daedric, but the only reason they're called Dromora this is so that they're not as powerful as the Daedric weapons that you get later. So you're not just coming up against all these people with super powerful weapons, nor are you able to just get them at level
and
1
And you can't
or 2.
Take their armor, which is interesting. You know, it almost looks like it's molded to their skin.
Yeah. They just molded to their skin. Convenient way to have the player not be able to get a full set of Daedric early on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a cool group of cool dudes.
I'm trying to find this
compelling podcast points.
I'm trying to find this section, although I can't now source it anywhere. But I remember hearing something about aesthetic refinement.
Have a look. But yeah, I definitely think
you think they're cool.
We will. Cool. They are really cool. We're definitely going to see them in Elder Scrolls 6 for sure. But I think it would be cool to see some of the... Because everyone actually talks a lot about the exploration of Daedra, as in the Daedric princes. It would be really cool to expand that. And a good way to expand exploration of them is through the Lesser Daedra and the societies that serve them. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying, like with the Dromora clan of you know, chefs or whatever, something like that. But in the same way, you could do it like... You know, imagine if you see Meet the Duke of Scamps and he's got his scamps and stuff. Like, maybe some of the other Daedra elements could go on there. Like, a bit more exposure to lesser Daedras that have personalities and that you actually come into conflict with.
I did find the source, boys.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Dromora clan involved with Battlespire. And it says, the clan is based in Havok Wellhead. It represents the principle of destruction as evolution, aspiring to arts and powers of ever-increasing potency and aesthetic refinement.
Right. Mm.
And there's a picture of Imago Storm with a really cool armor. Very shiny looking.
I was going to throw out, since we're actually on a touch, since there's not even that much on... the Scarfin, we could also just talk about the Scarfin because they are the other intelligent group of horned Dromora kind of humanoids. And I wonder if there's probably some cross-pollination every now and then, but they are known as the Dromora of the Fields of Regret. And basically this is what, it's Clavicus Vile's realm, and Clavicus Vile presents himself as a Scarfin-like character a lot of the time,
and Barbas does too in the Elder Scrolls Online, I believe. appears as a scarf. And...
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, because he's that's the thing. It's funny that Barbas is associated as the Hound and most represented as the Hound, but he's appeared as a scamp as well, as so scamp, Scarfin, and
yeah. Well, and you'll remember when we were talking about Hercene. You know, Hercene's got his Herns, the you know, horned form of Daedra, and we were talking about how there's some connection between Dagon and Hercene, and perhaps Clavicus Vile as well. And there are similarities.
Yeah, just so yeah, for like clarification, that was a quote from a developer, Gary Noonan. So it's the kind of thing you can take with. It's not canonized, but take it with a, you know, the ideas behind it. They're like,
there are possible connections to be drawn from, and you know, used in the Elder Scrolls VI.
Well, the Scarfen also do have some kind of caste system too. Like there is a there is a sense of hierarchy there, so. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if there is a relation, because they are similar to them in some aspects. It's not as simple as, oh, they also have horns.
Yeah. I imagine them being quite the, like, I mean, that's probably, to be honest, Scarfen probably more so fit what I was talking about with, like, Sanguine's realm of, like, chefs and things like that. Like, so. Scarfen probably fit the bill better.
I think Dromora would be cooking up some kind of torture kitchen before they'd be making some delicious food.
Yeah. We've got, like, so there's Herns as well, like you said, but what other, besides Mazkin and Auriel, are there any other, off the top of your head, can you remember any other, like, sort of intelligent Daedra? Ones that kind of classify more like a, similar to a mortal race rather than like a scamp or something. Though, you know, that's the thing, scamps and stuff and Frost Atronachs and Winged Twilights have said to, like, speak before, even they look more bestial, like, they're still, a lot of them can be, can have intelligence.
It seems like with the Atronachs, if I'm remembering correctly, is they kind of can almost become a bit of a hive mind. They have these weird realms that are just, you know, for example, the Flame Atronachs, can't remember the name of the realm, but it's just endless fire and they're all virtually identical. I think it's actually a Dromora who's talking about it and how mundane he finds Atronachs. But, you know, you've got things like, like Nocturnals and Shrikes, which Shrikes, I guess, is just...
Oh, yeah, too, the Nocturnal Shrikes.
And Mephala's, like, Spider Daedra seem to kind of talk. Yeah, they talk a bit, I think.
Yeah, and you can imagine it easily because they've got the humanoid upper body. You can imagine it. But, yeah.
There's also the Knights of Order, but they're, like, mindless beasts, aren't they? As much as they have a humanoid form, they're kind of just these order-keeping...
Kind of off topic, but just because you've mentioned them, I want to mention there's such a cool... I was posting it on Twitter, but the Shivering Isles concept art for them. So the original like concept art for a bunch of the Shivering Isles stuff, it's so cool. But the Knights of Order, instead of the like white crystalline look, it was more like a robot, like a clockworky sort of robot thing. It was all like a silvery sort of color.
Oh, I found it. That's so cool. Mm.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like, a lot of the Shivering Isles concept stuff, I'm sort of wish like, oh, man, if they executed it like that, it was so much crazier and cooler. And you, but yeah.
Much more alien feeling.
Also, I imagine Seekers are probably somewhat intelligent too.
Yeah. I feel like we're just ending up, you just end up blurring the lines because they're pretty much, there is more intelligence to, because even like, you know, I guess I wouldn't expect a Clan Fear to talk.
Yeah.
For example. Yeah. But anything with a somewhat humanoidish face, like even like a scamp or a Winged Twilight, like it's kind of like depends.
Yeah, they just don't seem as individualistic as Dromora and Zivalai tend to be in terms of like, you know, that very mortal thought process. They seem more singular in their purpose.
Yeah.
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 Well, I guess that wraps up the Dromora podcast. I kind of had a feeling it wouldn't be as long as some of the other ones, but it was interesting nonetheless.
It's still a topic people ask for a lot.
And I mean, who doesn't love the guttural voices you hear for the first time, you know, straight from the depths of hell?
Yeah, and in Oblivion it has that kind of like echo to it. Mm-hmm.
They chuck the reverb really cool. up real high on that one.
All
right,
I think that's it.
All right, thank you ladies and gentlemen for watching. Social media links are in the description below. If you want to get some Fudge Muppet merch, you can get some in the description as well and support the podcast. And we look forward to nerding out with you again very soon.
We'll see you next year.